Okay, good morning. Thank you very much for staying, hanging around this last day of what's been a really great conference. I appreciate it. My talk today, as she explained, is going to be about the SIP and the SF-12 instruments, and so bear with me as I explain a little bit about those initially, and then I'll tell you about some of the challenges that we encountered in our study. From those challenges, we ended up doing some very preliminary exploratory problem solving, I guess you would call it, and ran some numbers and some correlations, and I'll explain to you what we found with those as well. Before I go any further, though, I want to acknowledge that this work I completed, again, as a student, a PhD student, and I did this under the direction of Dr. Sean Kneipp. She's back in the back there and has to catch a flight very soon, but I wanted to thank her very much for her expertise and guidance. There's no way I could have done this without her, so. Okay. I have no relationships to disclose. So a little bit about the background first. The study, this study really, this large NINR study that Dr. Kneipp started, a five-year-long study from 2005 to 2010, was really the initial study. And so my work was conducted as kind of a spin-off, or again, some problem solving around this study. So just to give you a very brief background on that, the crux of really the NINR-funded study was to look at women in the TANF program, the Transition Assistance for Needy Families. And so the goal was to try to find out what their health problems might be and how we could transition them out of the program and into a working environment. So as we did that, one of the first things we had to do was assess what was their overall health status. And to do that, we had a couple of different instruments we used. One of those instruments was the SF-12. And the other was the SIP. The issue really was that as we checked out these 432 women, as we did their questionnaires, we left the SIP out of the first 100 participants. So that really presented some unique challenges as we looked back and realized this had happened, and we decided to take a look and see maybe was there some correlation with the SIP and the SF-12. All of them had the SF-12 done. So that was really kind of how we arrived at this correlation that we ended up doing. Okay, so before we got into any of this, we looked at the literature and decided to see maybe had some of these correlations been done in the past? Had SIP been compared with the SF-12? And if it had, what were the findings? And what I did find, there was no comparison previously. I did find that in many of the articles, they cited quite a few challenges with scoring, and particularly with the SIP, which I'm going to go through here in a few minutes and tell you a little bit about. The scoring is quite complex with each instrument, and some of the time that scoring resulted in some things that really weren't quite exactly what the researchers had expected. So, first, to give you a little bit of background then about the instruments, the first is the SIP. And the SIP has 136 questions. It's really quite long. It takes about 20 minutes to complete, and each of these questions is set into a category. There are 12 categories total. Now, that SIP was actually created and authored back in 1981, and during that time, it was widely used, and it still continues to be very widely used. In fact, one of the most widely used instruments for health status function that there is. The SF-12, that was authored by John Ware, Jr., and it has only 12 questions. It's very short, takes about 5 minutes, and it has 8 dimensions. So by comparison, if you just looked at the two, they really seem like they would be very different. But in fact, we'll share the findings here in a few minutes and let you know what we saw. So the SF-12, which is it's actually been versioned to version 2, has these 8 dimensions, and here they're highlighted for you. And I won't read them, but you can take a look. I've highlighted a few of the key dimensions that we felt might most accurately measure functional status in our group of 432 women. Again, these four, the physical functioning, social functioning, the role emotional, and role physical, we felt like might conceptually represent their functional status. And again, we were trying to get at what is their functional status and how is that maybe prohibiting them from transitioning out of this TANF program. So we took those four subscales and we combined them. And this hadn't been previously done. It was some problem solving. It was, again, very preliminary, something that we just thought would work. Okay. So as we did that, we used STATA, and so we labeled it SF12V2 funked in STATA, its own category, and again decided that we would use that in our analysis as we moved forward. Now the sickness impact profile, the one that I told you is 120 questions and takes 20 minutes to complete, has these 12 broad categories that you see listed here. And each of those categories has roughly anywhere between 8 and 12 questions that are within that category. They're somewhat interrelated, and they're really dichotomous as far as the scoring goes. In other words, the women either have this issue or they don't. An example might be, I have trouble sleeping, and yes I do or no I don't. All right, so they really could be dichotomous. Whereas the SF12, when you score that, it's a 5-level response, and that 5-level response is ranging from always to never. So in looking at the literature, there were some recommendations that came out in 2001, Pollard and Johnston, and they did a very thorough analysis of the SIP instrument. And what they found was that there may be some issues with the scoring as the scoring was originally posed. When SIP was released back in 1981, it was primarily supposed to be a summative method of scoring. In other words, you would add up everything that the women checked in that category, and you would get a total score. From that total score, you would then divide that by the max possible rating in that category, and then they multiplied times 100. So not really all that complex. An assumative approach was originally recommended. What Pollard and Johnston said, though, was that there might be some issues with that, and they had several different concerns. And two of those concerns were that there were logically exclusive items and that there was inconsistency in the scoring. They also cited some problems with the length of the questionnaire, and they thought that possibly the questions, the way that they were ordered, might be revisited as well, but we didn't address those. These were the two that we chose to really take a look at for our study. So to give you some exemplars of why there might be some concerns, this is the summative method and just a few of the statements within the SIP questionnaire. So for example, if I say that I'm eating much less than usual, I would get a score of 37. If I said that I'm drinking less, I'd get a score of 36. If I say that I'm eating no food at all, that's a much more severe condition, and I'd get a score of 133. So you kind of see how the scoring is going to go. And over to the right there, I went ahead and added it and showed you what that summative score would look like, and the category score would then be carried forward so that you could add up all the categories. Here's one of the biggest concerns, really, that we identified, though, and I put up here that a person with arthritis might actually score higher than a person who is paralyzed. And if you really take a look at this, if I said, because I have severe arthritis, that I have a difficult time getting in and out of the bathtub, I get a score of 84. And I can't maybe stand for a long time, and maybe I can't maintain my balance. By the time you add those up, they actually come up to a higher score than it would be if I said I was restricted to one position all the time. So you can see that there may be some pretty significant concerns there with the summative method of scoring. So we, after really examining the article and looking at those concerns, decided that we would go ahead and create a SIP version 2. And that SIP version 2 would, instead of using the summative method, use a maximum category score. So if my maximum category score was I was restricted to one position all the time, 133 points, that's the score that you would move forward and add up everything in those categories to get your total. We also decided, though, that maybe just in the interest of seeing what would happen, we would keep the SIP version 1, which is the summative method. So we kept the summative method, had one category for that, kept the maximum scoring, had a category for that. Going back, though, we had the other instrument, the SF12, and the SF12 with that composite score that we put our heads together and created. So we pulled this in as well. So at the end of the day, we had SIP version 1, SIP version 2, and this funked category that we would compare all of the three of them. This is what we found. Our population, again, was 432 women. Of that 432 women, the first 100 didn't have the SIP score, so we had to use subjects 101 to 432 for the SIP. When we did that, we compared SIP version 1 to SIP version 2. We found very little difference. They were very highly correlated. They looked quite similar. And at least at the beginning, this was a little bit surprising to us, because as we had highlighted some of the problems, looked at the article, we thought there might be a profound difference. There wasn't. So as we really engaged in some dialogue about that, thought about it a little bit, it began to make sense because our 432 women, by and large, were pretty healthy. They were a mean age of 28, and they had some health problems, but they didn't have the kind of health problems that you might see with someone who was, again, for example, paralyzed. So they might have had some problems sleeping, they might have had some changes in their appetite, but they weren't experiencing very severe functional problems, and so it made a lot more sense that the SIP version 1 and 2 were pretty highly correlated. Another thing that we found, and this was what we were looking for, we were hoping for some pretty profound results here, but we found that the composite score of the SF-12 was only moderately correlated with the SIP, and we used Spearman's row for that. We were hoping to see that they were very highly correlated because then that first 100 subjects that didn't have the SIP done, it would make better sense, but they were correlated, again, moderately so. One of the other things, though, that we were able to see that actually did come up as being fairly well correlated was some other measures of health status. And I didn't mention that we used the BDI-2 in this study as well for depression. But those depression scores in the SF-12 came up fairly highly correlated, as you can see here. So those were a little bit more robust. And actually, it looks like maybe in some instances, the SF-12 may be a pretty good indicator of some of those other health measures. So in conclusion, there are some problems with the traditional scoring methodology used in SIP, and in having looked at that, we really didn't find that a lot of people had compared that summative method with the max weighting, and so one of our first recommendations might be that some other studies be done to compare those different methodologies for scoring to see just how those would come up, and particularly in a sicker population, maybe somebody some population that was a little bit older than our mean age of 28. Another thing was that it didn't seem to capture the variability in functional status quite like we thought, so that was another conclusion that we arrived at. And we felt like given these challenges that there's a great deal more research that needs to be done with these instruments, and they really, especially the SIP, shouldn't just be taken at face value, that we need to take a very strong look at those along with the patient population before you use one scoring methodology or the other. Okay, and again here, looks like that we had some correlation, not quite as highly correlated as we hoped with the SF-12 and the SIP, but again, they did correlate. And when you think back to the SIP taking 20 minutes to complete, 120 questions, it's very time-consuming. The SF-12 takes 5 minutes. It's possible that that could be a reasonable alternative, and if so, it may save time, save money, and be an option in some of the future studies. And again, acknowledging and thanking Dr. Knipe. Appreciate it very much, all of your help. And that is it. Any questions?
I feel like we're privileged to be in this room. You're stellar. I want to point out that Sean is the new chair of the research committee for public health nursing extension. So anybody who's interested in being on a committee. Why don't we have questions for Carla for a few minutes, then we'll have the rest of the panelists have seats and we can answer them all questions.
Yes. Well, actually, the SF-36 was not something that I personally considered. I'm not sure if maybe Dr. Knipe considered that initially or not, but... Yeah, the literature supports that if you're going to use the SF-12 that you need a fairly large sample size as well, and it basically it just said it greater than 100 subjects, so again, I think that was a reasonable choice. Anything else?
Why don't we have the rest of our speakers come up? I wanted to ask Laura. Thank you. Can you just come up to the chairs up here? I was wondering if you're publishing your work.
Hopefully. That's the plan.
Stabilization, if I understand it correctly, is problem identification and intervention followed only by surveillance? Yeah. I wonder if there's a way to get back to the definition, because I would hate to give the wrong definition.